Well, Ecclesiastes chapter 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, page 673, if you're using our copy of the scriptures, page 673. Now, the context is that we've Solomon's been talking about the mystery of providence, and that there is no guarantee of blessing, prosperity, even though we're good Christians. There's no guarantee of a wonderful life here, even though we're great Christians. He's been telling us that time and chance happens to us all. Happens to us all. Chapter 9, verse 11. Now, Solomon, as you will have noticed, and I certainly noticed in preparing, that he jumps from one subject to another very quickly. So I'm going to do the same. I'm going to jump from one subject to another. And that's why I didn't read the whole passage together. We're going to read some verses now and jump from one to another. So I've grouped them together, hopefully. So that's what we'll do. I want to look at verses 1 to 4 now. Ecclesiastes 10, page 673, verses 1 to 4. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly outweighs wisdom and honour. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. Even when the fool walks on the road, he lacks sense, and he says to everyone that he is a fool. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place, for calmness will lay great offences to rest. Jump to verse 11. If the serpent bites before it is charmed, there is no advantage to the charmer. Jump to verse 18 to 20. Through the sloth the roof sinks in, and through indolence the house leaks. Bread is made for laughter, and wine gladdens life, and money answers everything. Even in your thoughts, do not curse the king, nor in your bedroom curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature tell the matter. Have you noticed how children love knocking things down? The blocks have a pile of blocks, and they love knocking them down, knocking things over. They love tearing newspapers. They love pushing sandcastles down, destroying it, smashing it, even like breaking windows. Remember my son, my family, just loved to do it and did it one day. So, that's because it's easier to destroy something than to build something. It's easy to destroy. It can take years and years and decades to build something, to make something, and destroy it in a second. You don't need skill to destroy something. You need skill to build it up, and not to destroy. You don't need to plan or organize to destroy, but to create, you do. A little thing can ruin something big. A little thing can ruin something big. One silly move, and you can destroy much. A whole lifetime of labor can be destroyed. Remember the watchmaker, Ratner's, was it? The managing director. He made a foolish statement. That it's just rubbish or trash. Business crashed. A lifetime building up, and a foolish statement put it really wrong. Dead flies make the perfumer's ointment give off a stench. So a little folly, verse 1, outweighs wisdom and honour. Everyone can look back in their own life, I think, to a greater or lesser degree. Some to a big degree. If only I hadn't done that. If only I didn't take that extra drink. I would never have been caught and lost my job and lost everything and so on. If only I didn't. If I hadn't decided to go that night. If I just stayed at home that night. A little thing. A little decision that seemed inconsequential, but was very consequential. That's life. That's life. Still pray. Still hold on to your faith. Don't give it up. Even little things we see in secret, in private, in the bedroom, as we were reading there. Things we say in private, even in your thought. Do not curse the rich, for a bird of the air will carry your voice, or some winged creature will tell the matter. President Nixon of America, the bugging on the room, a little folly in the room, said, and it ruined his whole presidency. Be careful what you say, even in private. And there's various winged creatures nowadays who carry our statements far and wide. Microphones. Little microphones, rooms are filled with bugs. Remember the reporters, the sporting, the football, I think, reporters, the two of them a few years ago lost their jobs. They thought their microphones were switched off. And they started chatting and speaking and calling the referee or linesman or whatever. I can't remember exactly. They lost their jobs. The mics were, forgot the mic was turned on. It wasn't turned off. The two sports reporters found out that you can't withdraw the spoken word. It's a way off to the great white throne to meet us there again. Everything we say, everything we think, we're going to meet with it all yet. Once you've said something, you can't withdraw it. Sometimes it's too late to apologise. Sometimes it's too late to apologise. That's why Solomon says in verse 11. There's no advantage in calling a charmer after the serpent was bitten. No point calling a charmer. Too late. Closing the stable door after the horse has bolted. That's what term we use nowadays. To be careless and unwatchful can have heavy costs. Through laziness and slothfulness, great damage can be done. As Solomon says, through sloth, the roof sinks in, and through indolence, the house leaks. And a greater cost will eventually have to be paid. So we need to pay attention to things when it goes wrong. Now, another indication of a foolish man is through pride. Through pride. Very often, important people in high positions can do very foolish things. Even important people, famous people, royalty, politicians can be huffy and moody. I've seen intelligent people do very foolish things in order to get their own back. In order to get their own back, oh, a dangerous thing, revenge. Oh, I'm going to get that fella yet. Well, the Bible's so much against that. And it's so foolish. It really is. In spite of someone, some people will do really stupid, foolish things. I've known people to resign. Remember someone coming and saying, I'm going to leave. I'm going to leave right now. Don't be crazy. That's the daftest thing you can do, but he did it. And he left lucrative posts in order to spite his employer, to get his own back in something that happened years ago. To get his own back. That's why Solomon is saying, if anger of the ruler rises against you in verse 4. If the anger of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your place. Don't resign, don't retire. For calmness will lay great offences to rest. Calmness. Don't get angry. Don't seek revenge. Some people just refuse to acknowledge their mistakes. Rather than admit it, they take steps to get their own back and only ultimately harm themselves and their families. It's when we counter accusations that a fight begins. You see, it's the second blow that starts a fight. It's the second blow that starts a fight. Calmness will lay great offences to rest. Don't respond. If you agree with your critics, if you're appeased, if you take the wind, you'll take the wind out of their sails if you agree with them. If they come and criticise you, and they're right, really, but your ego's hurt, agree with them. Yeah, you're right. They don't have anything more to say. Calmness. They've got their point. And the wind comes out of their sails. They can't do much more. Because it's a fight they're wanting a lot of them. And it's the second blow that starts it. Sometimes you can spot a fool a mile away. A fool can disguise his true self for a while, for a time, but it won't be too long before he makes himself known, the kind of person that he really is. As Solomon says, the fool says to everyone that he's a fool in all different kinds of ways. He'll eventually show that he is a fool by what he does and by what he says. Even walking on the road in a casual way, he'll start blabbing and he'll start speaking and he'll tell you and you'll find out the fool he actually really is. We should keep silent. We should keep silent. There are wise fools who keep silent and are not going to open their mouth and confirm their stupidity. And so Solomon says, as he has said in the Proverbs before this, he said, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. Proverbs 17:28. Now verse 2, finally, in this section. Don't get concerned if you're left-handed or if you're left-wing in politics. It's nothing to do with politics. It's nothing to do with being left-handed. I'll read verse 2. A wise man's heart inclines him to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. In Hebrew culture, the right hand meant correctness, rightness, and the left hand was known as being foolish and wrong hand, a wrong choice. Thus, a wise heart inclines them to the right, but a fool's heart to the left. To be left-handed was a great problem for the Jews. They didn't like it. They thought something was wrong. That was built up in their culture, and God was trying to sort it. And that's why he recorded twice in the judges that God had raised up in the book of Judges. He rose up left-handed men and made them victors. And to prove this very point, that to be left-handed doesn't mean God can't use you or that you're of no use. Or you're in the wrong path. Ehud, a left-handed man in Judges chapter 3, and the fat King Eglon, unsuspectingly having his sword on the other side, gives an instance of left-handed people doing a great thing. He pierced the sword. He wasn't expecting, the opponent wasn't expecting to be stabbed, and he was because of him being left-handed. Anyway, that's that. Now let's look at verses 8 to 10. Ecclesiastes 10, verses 8 to 10. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and a serpent will bite him who breaks through a wall. He who quarries stones is hurt by them. He who splits logs is endangered by them. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, he must use more strength. But wisdom helps one to succeed. So Solomon now encourages people to continue doing something good, despite the fact you may be injured in the process. It's just warning you. You can be doing a good job, but something horrible might happen. There are those who hold back from doing something good because of the possibility of danger or trouble. But Solomon reminds that if we dig a pit, we may well indeed fall into it if we're careless. And if we can break through a wall, a serpent could bite us there. If you're not watchful, watch for all the dangers. If we're going to quarry stones, we could be hurt by it, carrying and get strained back and whatever. If we're going to split logs, could be endangered by them. But to be watchful and careful. Just because you're doing something good doesn't mean something can't happen. Chainsaws are wonderful machines, aren't they? They can do a power of work. I saw a man recently cutting down the tree in our back garden, a big tree, and it was done in an hour. Sawing up all the things. They're dangerous. They're very dangerous things. But don't let one mistake or an injury stop you doing what's good. Just learn from what you know. The man that never got injured and never made a mistake never made anything. There's not a carpenter or a plumber or an electrician who can't tell you of some accident, some electric shock he got, or some near one that he had. It's part of the job. It's part of life. Just be watchful. Just be careful. But still do good things. If only those who work and take risks, it is only those who work and take risks that helps one to succeed. You have to keep on trying and using your head and some wisdom. As we have in the end of verse 10, wisdom helps one to succeed. Be wise. Be careful. Take precautions. Take precautions. If the iron is blunt and one does not sharpen the edge, don't kill yourself by using more energy. Sharpen the edge. Sharpen the edge. You must use more strength. It's hard work and wisdom. It's wisdom that makes success success. If you're going to do something good, you will have setbacks. Be assured of it, but don't stop. The whole point Solomon is making here is to persevere. 90% of failures is due to people quitting too soon. 90% of unachieved objectives is because people have quit, stopped too soon. Wisdom helps one to succeed. Yes, all agree, but wisdom is also necessary to handle success. Once you've got success, once you've achieved a lot, you need wisdom to handle it, to look after it, to take care of it. How many millionaires have not looked after their money? How many sons of businesses that have been left or whatever have even built up themselves? They were foolish. See, this is full of practical wisdom, Ecclesiastes. Temptation comes and the foolish submit to it. Even among the godly people in Scripture, some saints ruined themselves because of a moment of folly, because they were unable to handle success. Even there's Lot. He had a business eye. He said to his father Abraham, "Look, we're not bringing enough for you. We can't go on with this for this year." And he saw the land away to Sodom. It's good here. Water, there's good irrigation. And he went there. But he couldn't handle it. He got caught up in the culture. He got caught up in the culture, didn't he? And he ended up in a cave. A cave. Made his wife, his daughters pregnant. Caught up in the culture. Samson. Raised up a judge. Used to kill many of them. We couldn't handle the situation. And so on. Solomon himself. All his women. All the women drove him crazy. Foolish. You need wisdom. Wisdom all the time. Wisdom to achieve. Wisdom to manage. Wisdom to contain. Well, let's look at verses 12 and to 15 now. Verses 12 to 15. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favour, but the lips of a fool consume him. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and the end of his talk is evil madness. A fool multiplies words, though no man knows what is to be, and who can tell him what will be after him. The toil of a fool wearies him, for he does not know the way to the city. Well, we've all met the fellow, haven't we, who speaks loudly at the table next to us in the restaurant, making predictions and showing off his knowledge and his skill and what he's achieved and who he is. He likes to hear his own voice and loves when people are listening to his wisdom. But Solomon says a fool multiplies words. And he adds, no man knows what is to be, and no one can tell him what will be after him. The man who publicly criticizes the counselors and the powers that be, the government and the young, he'll be found to put his foot in it before long. The loudmouth. The beginning of the words of his mouth is foolishness, and at the end of his talk is evil madness. In my young days, I remember an apprentice, and there were tea breaks, a quarter of an hour in the morning, quarter of an hour in the afternoon. We'd all gather round a table and we'd dig out our sandwiches or whatever we had, and we all started chatting, and everyone stopped and we gathered round and chatted, and there were always the same guys who would hold the floor and who would control the topics for discussion, the football match, the dance, whatever it was there is. And I used to enjoy all the foolish things that people used to say. There was Gambling Bob telling us which horse would win, and the next day we'd find that that horse was the last in the race. Or Wee Jock showing off his knowledge and exposing the young apprentice's ignorance of history. He was a historian, this fellow, and he was showing off and he was boasting and he was talking a lot, and he always controlled the topic at tea time, each person making himself look good amongst the others. But you know, everyone knows that the really humble and the really wise ones don't need to tell you they're wise. The really good people don't need to boast about it. It's those who aren't good that boast and say, you don't need to tell a wise man that he's wise. The words of a wise man's mouth win him favour, but the lips of a fool consume him. The wise man does not need to tell others he's wise. He's recognised without stating it himself. Well, the last passages, verses 5 to 7. There is an evil that I have seen under the sun, as it were, an error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in many high places, and the rich sit in a low place. I have seen slaves on horses, and princes walking on the ground like slaves. And then jump to 16 and 17. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Happy are you, O land, when your king is the son of the nobility and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. One of the biggest mistakes politicians can make is to appoint unsuitable successors. It's an error proceeding from the ruler. Solomon says, I've seen slaves and horses and princes walking on the ground like slaves. And woe to you, O land, when your king is a child. Now, obviously, a child can't rule, and he's obviously not talking about a child in years, but a child in experience, a child in ignorance, in knowledge. Someone is in power who is to put someone in power who's untried and unknown is folly. We live in an age when children rule. I remember as chaplain in the schools, two schools, remember the headmaster saying that you must listen to the children now. You must listen to what they say because they've got as much wisdom as we have. I remember us in the school board, the headmaster, the rectors, wanting the children to lead and to be consulted in all the big decisions. Let them choose for themselves. They have every right to choose. They have every bit as much knowledge. It always amazed me. And for big decisions, even the designing of a new building, all that, what do you want? And to give the children, what do they want? My friends, we have to lead children. We have to direct children. We have to prevent them making the mistakes society makes, children make, and adults make. Woe to you when children rule. When your king is a child. Parents have to lead their children, to direct their children. This is the good thing. This is the right thing. Oh, I don't want it. I don't like it. Doesn't matter. We've been around and we know what is good. Children do not know. Children do not have experience. They don't know. They'll make the same mistakes that you and I made. All of us can look back in our lives at the mistakes we've made. Let's make sure the children don't follow us. And we lead and we guide. We don't ask them. We can consult them for some things and all that. But decision making is so important. We must prepare and educate and warn children about what's good and what's wrong and what's bad, whether they want it or not. Because we will suffer. We will have pain. The Bible's teaching. We must teach them the truth. Look at Jesus. Now he is the par excellence, the example par excellence of everything, a child. What do we read about him? We read the passage there. He went to the church after the church service to learn more from those who knew. Remember, he was a child of 12 just learning. And he was listening. And he asked questions. And he accepted the answers. Jesus Christ, as a child, listening to them and asking them questions and accepting what the church was saying, what the rabbis were saying, gaining from the knowledge of the experience of God's visiting his people and showing them and leading them into the scriptures. Jesus, as a child, went to learn and listened and asked questions. And he was submissive to his parents and to all authority. The perfect example. And as an adult too, friends, what wisdom he spoke. Christ is wisdom personified. All this is pointing, all these things that are there that we're telling about, Jesus did. Jesus taught as well. They marveled at his words. They marveled, they were surprised. What wisdom is this? This is speaking. This is Joseph. This is the girl say that we know. This is, he didn't go to school. He hadn't got a tutor. The wisdom of God. And he was an example. He's got wisdom. And what does Jesus himself say about those with authority and rule and wisdom? They came from all parts. Came from all parts to hear the wisdom of Solomon, who wrote this. To hear the wisdom, not to see his palaces, but to hear his wisdom. And a greater than Solomon's here. I am the one, my friends. What does Jesus say? What does Jesus teach? That's what's important. We have to listen to that. The wisdom of Solomon, the greater than Solomon, is here. Jesus is the real and the perfect example. He is wisdom and righteousness. We heard this morning, he's our righteousness. If you don't have Christ, if I don't have Christ, we're doomed. Doomed, no matter how good we may have been or how hard we have tried to be good and to follow the Lord. Christ, our righteousness is yours. All this is about wisdom for this world, preparing us for the next. For the new heavens and the new earth, where righteousness dwells, right works, right happenings, and so on. Jesus Christ, his words, and his ways. Well, may God bless our studies together, our time together. Let's have a few moments of silent prayer as we ask God to bless us and to give us this wisdom, and that we would seek more and more of this wisdom for ourselves.